interest of Nzigi Imana R., and I apologize to you, Mr. Stevens, because I suspect I just butchered your client's name.
Actually, I think you did very well.
Thank you very much, and good morning to you, Mr. Stevens, and you may proceed.
Mr. Chief Justice, Your Honors, may it please the Court. My name is Bruce Stevens, and I represent the appellants, Christopher and Stephanie Evans. This case involves a case from the Juvenile Court of Hall County. The case was first filed in October of 2013. The Evans adopted Nzigi Yamana, I butchered it worse than you did, who was fortunately referred to as Ziggy. They adopted Ziggy's sister, Britton, in November of 2014. In December of 2014, a petition to terminate parental rights was filed against Ziggy's parents. An amended petition to terminate parental rights was filed in March of 2015, and an order terminating parental rights was entered on April of 2015. The Evans filed their complaint for leave to intervene in April of 2015. The juvenile court ruled that the Evans did not have standing, and we timely appealed. It is our position that the Evans should have been allowed to intervene. Ziggy's parents' parental rights were terminated in April. The Evans, both as individuals and as Britton's parents, have standing to intervene. Nebraska Revised Statute 43-1311.02 sub 3 allows for motions for joint sibling placement, sibling visitation, or ongoing interaction between siblings. 43-13.02 requires the Department of Health and Human Services to make reasonable efforts to do these things, but when they and the county attorney refuse to do these things, who does that leave to enforce the law? The Department of Health and Human Services and the county attorney have abdicated their responsibilities to follow the law. The department stopped all contact between Evans, Britton, and Ziggy as soon as they asked for placement. That is absolutely contrary to the law. So they obviously see no need to follow the law. The county attorney, HHS, and the guardian ad litem, and the court itself proceeded with an adoption, knowing that this appeal was pending, so we know that they don't want to follow the law. That only leaves the Evans. They're the only ones who can force anyone to follow the law. The Fostering Connections Act gives children the right to at least maintain contact and preferably be placed with one another. The state would have you believe that that only applies to HHS placements, but that's not what the law says.
Do you think this statute imposes a ministerial duty upon the department to keep the siblings together in their placements?
I think that the Fostering Connections Act, as well as sections... There's two other sections besides...
that's 40. Okay. I don't care about the number.
That it's very clear that they prefer placement with siblings. And Senator Gwen Howard made it very clear when she stated that...
Is that a duty they're required to perform?
I believe so. And they refused to do that.
Could you have brought a writ of mandamus?
We can't file anything if we're not allowed to intervene. So I don't know that a writ of mandamus would have been appropriate here. We asked for leave to intervene.
Clients are the foster parents or the adoptive parents of the sibling?
They are the adoptive parents.
Okay. So what prevents you from filing a writ as one of the siblings to require the Department of Health and Human Services to place this child with the sibling?
I suppose that would be an option. But I think we also should have been allowed to intervene and ask for placement. It would have been much easier and clearer and more succinct to do it.
What is the scope of, what is the purpose of the Fostering Connections Act? Is this to impose duties on the department?
It imposes a duty upon the department, the state, and the courts. And it is clear that, as Senator Howard indicated, that the right of sibling relationships not be infringed upon when the state makes placement decisions.
But that word right doesn't appear anywhere in that statute, does it?
I don't think that it has to. I think that it makes clear that it says shall. It uses the word shall in numerous instances, that they shall consider this, they shall make these placements, unless the court finds reason why that shouldn't happen. They didn't do that. They didn't even try to do that.
Does the Fostering Connections Act include any kind of remedy if the department or the county attorney doesn't do what is suggested in the statute?
I don't believe that there is a remedy per se in the Fostering Connections Act. I think it's just that this is what you shall do. And if they refuse to follow the laws they are doing here, then someone has to be able to enforce that, which is what we are trying to do.
Counsel, how does the subsequent adoption affect these proceedings?
I think it's null and void. They knew, the county attorney, HHS, the guardian ad litem, and even the court knew that this appeal was pending. So it's our position that that adoption is completely null and void.
Is that before us? Is that adoption before us in any way?
No, the county attorney filed a motion to dismiss, saying that it was moot.
Dismiss the juvenile proceeding.
Pardon me?
To dismiss the juvenile proceeding because the adoption was complete.
I believe it was to dismiss this appeal, and the court denied that.
What part of this statute gives you authority to intervene in this particular action?
I think that 25-328, as well as 43-1311.02.
What's the second one you said?
43-1311.02.
That's the Fostering
Connections. That's the Fostering Connections Act.
Okay.
It does not specifically refer to intervention, but again, it says that these things shall be done. And if the state, the guardian ad litem, and HHS refuses to do it and snubs their nose to do it, they've abdicated their responsibilities under the law, and that leaves only the Evans with the ability to enforce or to enforce the law.
We have a number of cases that say when the word shall is used and there is no remedy or no enforcement mechanism, that really amounts to a may as opposed to a shall. How do you respond to that line of cases?
I'm sorry. My response is that we have had, HHS's policy has been for years, rightfully so, that you try and keep families together. The Fostering Connections Act tried to even further that and cement that in our psyche. If we say, well, okay, this is the law and you're supposed to do this, and we say you shall do this, but you don't want to do it, then okay, that's tough luck for the kids. I don't think that was what was intended, and I don't think that that would be fair or appropriate.
Suppose you have what used to be a family, and you have one sibling that's been adopted by one couple, you have another sibling that's been adopted by some other couple, and you then have a sibling that's in the system. Are all of these folks going to be permitted to intervene and, in essence, turn this into a free-for-all?
If they're going to ask for adoption, I think that they have that right to at least be heard and be considered. If the state won't follow the law, and that's their only remedy, is to get the state to follow the law, I think so.
Well, the heart of your argument, is it not? The heart of your argument is the duty imposed on the department by the statute provides others supposedly harmed by the failure to comply with that duty with some corresponding right to be enforced. That's the heart of your argument, right?
Yes, I would have to agree with that.
Thank you.
I see that I'm into my rebuttal, so I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. And we would ask the court to remand this back with directions to allow our clients to intervene. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is it Ms. Alexander?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning to you.
May it please the court.
Are you going to be splitting time or anything like this?
Yes, I'm sorry. I should have started with that. I will be splitting time half and half with the guardian ad litem, so I'll use my first five.
Okay, you've got 5 minutes then. You may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Megan Alexander, Deputy Paul County Attorney, representing the appellee of the state of Nebraska in this case. There's one issue that I have never seen addressed by the appellants in this case, either in their briefs or in their argument today. And that issue is that the appellants are barred by the plain language of the statute from intervening in this case. Intervention under Nebraska law is governed by statute. Section 25328 unambiguously states that intervention is only allowed before the commencement of the trial. Appellants in this case did not file a motion to intervene until after, in fact, any trial that could be had upon this case had concluded and a judgment had been rendered in that trial. I think the evil that the statute is seeking to prevent by requiring intervention only before the commencement of trial is the evil that the appellants are asking this court to allow. As a judicial system, we need finality in the judgments rendered by our courts. And the finality of judgments is thrown into chaos if litigants are allowed to intervene at any time in the case. And I think the need for finality is really especially important in our juvenile courts. And we can see that when we look at the purpose of our juvenile courts. I think there are three things we're trying to achieve overall. Those would be, we want children who are under juvenile court jurisdiction to be safe and well cared for. We want them to be loved. And we want to achieve permanency for these children.
Is it your position that if they had made a timely request to intervene, that they would have been entitled to do so as a matter of right?
No, Your Honor, it is not. I would still argue that the appellants do not have the requisite interest to intervene in this case, but I would not be able to be up here arguing that they are time barred by statute if they had filed before commencement of trial in this case.
So if they had no adequate remedy at law in the juvenile proceeding, could they have brought a mandamus action to compel the department to perform its duty under the law? Who's going to be able to enforce this if the department says we're not paying any attention to this particular activity, we'll go ahead with our own private adoptions or public adoptions and ignore the fact that this person is a sibling of another person?
Your Honor, I would submit that I don't think the department did ignore their duty in this case. I think that appellants interpret 43-13-11-02 incorrectly. The state's position is that statute only applies when the state or the department would have placement authority over both or all siblings. In any case, it doesn't convey any right to intervene. It's a statute that directs the department take steps to do joint sibling placement when they can, when they have placement authority over the sibling. Or, and it has some other means to provide that.
This is a discretionary function then of the department?
I don't think it's discretionary, but I think what could possibly happen, I talked about in my brief, if other, if the department doesn't have placement control over the siblings, it could lead to just a lot of really chaos and placement.
Well, suppose that were these two children, were their rights terminated in the same proceeding?
These two children, were their rights terminated in the same proceeding?
Parental rights.
No. This child was born in 2013, was removed from the home in September of 2013.
So wouldn't the department be looking at, in this type of situation, to placement with the parents of the other sibling that had been adopted before it looked at other areas?
This sibling wasn't adopted before the child was born. This is an afterborn sibling. So this child was born in May of 2014 after Ziggy had already been removed from the home. And
was subsequently adopted.
And was subsequently adopted, yes,
well,
Your Honor.
Okay, so then what would the department look to? Ziggy's adopted parents for placement as the first step in keeping the siblings together?
They could have, but this was a private adoption which the department had no say in. The parents had this afterborn sibling after Ziggy was in his placement. And then the parents decided to have the appellants adopt the child Britton who was born after Ziggy had been removed.
So the fact that Ziggy was adopted privately has some effect upon the department's duty to place the siblings in the same family?
I'm sorry, the fact that Ziggy was or the fact that Britton, the sibling that the appellants adopted was?
Oh, never mind. Go ahead.
I understood you to say that your position is that the Fostering Connections Act only applies when the department has jurisdiction over all the siblings. Is that your position?
In the particular section 43-13-11-02, I think the only way to interpret that is but it does give some placement directives when the siblings are all under the placement authority of the department.
Why is that a logical reading?
Well, I think what the situation that you get otherwise is the situation we're facing today, where this child has been in a very stable placement for a long time, and that is now thrown into question by this. I think, like I said, we're trying to achieve permanency for these children. At any time that there is an afterborn sibling to interrupt, it seems that it doesn't facilitate the goal of permanency for children. If we're going to interrupt a stable placement every time an afterborn sibling...
I'm not tracking this. So if you have an afterborn sibling, does it ordinarily follow that the first child has been placed and therefore there's no jurisdiction over the first child?
I'm sorry. I'm not understanding your question.
You're saying that the department has to have jurisdiction over all the kids in the picture
to apply at the joint sibling placement. And I think that the statute does require the department to make reasonable efforts to facilitate.
Wouldn't that interpretation defeat the purpose of the statute? Because the purpose of the statute is to try and place the siblings in the same family in order to keep that unity of the family, isn't it? And you're saying, and so in the logical course of things, some kids are going to be placed outside the home, some are going to be adopted, and maybe the mother has another child, and that kid is then taken away from her, and then the department seeks placement somewhere else before they look to the placement of the prior siblings?
Yes, and in the situation you're talking about, though, you said that the department takes another child when you look to placement. With the siblings who
the have first
been
the first child is not in play. The first kid's been placed,
and
right?
I think if the department,
then another child comes along, and how would you apply the act to this afterborn?
If the department had the placement authority over the afterborn sibling, and the sibling was removed,
and not authority over the first one because the first one's now found a home.
True, but I think that they would have the authority to try to place the sibling that they had removed with the older sibling if that placement was willing to take placement of the child that had just been removed. And I have run out of time. There are no further questions. I'll cede the rest of my time to the guardian ad litem.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is it Ms. Godding?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning to you. We'll give you 5 minutes, and then we'll give Mr. Stevens some rebuttal time.
Thank you, ma'am. Please report. Stacey Godding, if I may, I'll just jump right in. In looking at 43-13-11-02, which we were just discussing, I certainly do agree with the state's position on the interpretation of the statute. And here we are dealing with an extremely complex family. Not only is there Ziggy and then the afterborn sibling, Britton, there's also another sibling strip that's older than Ziggy, another 4 children older than him. And when you look at this case, the testimony at the hearing was the department did follow the statute. They did look to place Ziggy upon his removal with siblings, the older siblings. That was with a relative placement, his great-grandmother, she did not want that placement, did not feel she could serve as placement for a fifth child. At that point, Ziggy was placed into a foster home. So if the question is, did the department follow their duty to try to comply with 43-13-11-02, I believe that they did, and
What prevented them from seeking to place the subsequent, or the youngest, let's call it the youngest sibling, to be placed with Ziggy's family?
That was a decision of their mother. That she had
The youngest child was never under the authority of the department, right?
Correct. So she made a choice. Rather than risk a removal by the department or interference or investigation or anything of that matter, she made a choice to pursue a private adoption done by an attorney in Broken Bow, and that would be with the family, with the appellant. So the mother of these children made that choice not to explore other family placements. She made that decision to place with a non-relative youngest child.
Does the department have any duties in connection with that scenario?
I don't believe they do, because this child is not under the court's jurisdiction. There's no way to require them to do or not do anything. And when you look at 4315...
Does the department play any role in the placement of the youngest child?
No.
Doesn't the act include, though, unadjudicated siblings as people that should be given notice, and they should have placement opportunities, and they should also have visitation opportunities if possible? Unadjudicated siblings in this situation would be the youngest child that was adopted by the appellant?
Correct. I do believe that the Act wants the department to look at all siblings. I think that when you speak to a ministerial duty, I think that's what the duty is to provide the notice to all siblings and to look at how do we preserve those relationships. But this Act does not give placement as the only option for preserving sibling relationships. In fact, it goes on to talk about, and this is still 13-1102, it's a very long section, there are other means of pursuing those sibling relationships, and we're going to look to the best interests of the child. We're going to look at is sibling contact and for the child's well-being or safety. We're going to look at the best interests of the child who is before the court. So we can look at doing visits. We could look at educating adoptive parents on the importance of those biological or birth family connections. There are other ways to further that relationship. It does not require a placement.
Well, what did the department do there? Some suggestion that the department has completely stopped contact with Ziggy. Is that correct?
I believe that is correct.
And how does that fit into the Act?
I don't think it does fit into the Act. I think there does need to be some ongoing sibling contact. The difficulty of it is we're dealing with a large and complex family, and everyone has to have some level of cooperation and trust in doing that. And unfortunately, because of this case, I think there's a large amount of suspicion and animosity, which is making it difficult to make those visits and things happen the way that they should be as contact.
The fact of a lot of moving parts is probably commonplace. And in view of that, there's a statute out there that's imposing some kind of duties, perhaps. How are they fulfilled with moving parts?
Well, I think the department has fulfilled it, again, in looking to the older sibling placement, the possible placement. They fulfilled it with having contact with Britton, youngest sibling, family. There's been team meetings where that family has participated, that family has had information about this case. Visits have taken place, and of course, correct that, it's my understanding they have since stopped. But the department has made efforts to do those visits.
Do you agree with the county attorney's proposition that the DHS and the Act only apply if DHS has authority over all the siblings that are implicated, including perhaps older children for whom there may have been a completed adoption?
I do. And
what would be the continuing, if any, authority of the department over a child who's been adopted successfully?
I don't think there is any continuing authority over that child who's been
so
adopted.
How do you reconcile that with the proposition that DHS has to have authority over a child for that law to be applicable? There's an older child that is for whom DHS is not exercising authority.
Correct.
Not an uncommon scenario.
No. I think if you look at subsection 5, it reads, if an order is entered for termination of parental rights of siblings, and then there's language where subject to this section. Just language like that throughout this statute leads me to believe that the Foster Connections Act is speaking to those siblings who the court has jurisdiction over or that the department has jurisdiction over, to preserve those sibling relationships while there is court or department intervention. What happens prior to that or after that, the juvenile courts never have any control over. Like you cross your fingers and you hope you've made
so in the case of an older child for whom adoption is completed, that child and the family of that child is essentially out of the picture from a standpoint of duty.
I believe so. Not saying it wouldn't be in the child's best interest to still make a contact or try to facilitate a relationship. It may be, but I don't think from a point of duty that.
Thank you very much. Now, do we have time for rebuttal?
I gave him some time.
Okay, 1 minute and 32 seconds. We'll give you we'll give you 2 more minutes on that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Your Honor, I'd like to address the statement by opposing counsel regarding Nebraska Revised Statute 25-328. That does refer to prior to the commencement of trial. That was a civil statute, and it was contemplating civil cases. It's not in the juvenile code, although juvenile courts are civil courts. It did not contemplate all the various moving parts, as you would, that you have for a juvenile case. You have the original petition. Are we saying that we have to file a motion to intervene prior to that? Then you have two petitions to terminate parental rights. And even after that, you have issues of placement. You have various issues. So our position is that that those three words, four words, prior to commencement of trial, are not legally binding and prohibitive to our case. In regards to the issue of joint sibling jurisdiction.
So we just read them out of the statute?
No, I think that there still are, that's referring to a civil case where you prior to the issues being decided. The issues have not all been decided in a juvenile court case at this point.
Are there many little trials?
Oh, what? Yeah, in juvenile court?
In the juvenile process.
There are a lot.
Is that your position?
It is.
Okay.
In regard to the joint sibling jurisdiction, I think that is a false argument to say that, HHS had no authority over those children. That's not what the Fostering Connections Act says. That is not what Section 43-246 sub 5 says. That is not what 43-533 sub 4 says. Those would all deal with sibling placement. Or family placements. To say that HHS doesn't have any responsibility under the Fostering Connections Act and those two statutes is simply ridiculous. That the issue is the best interest of the children, and those children's best interests are to maintain contact. It is not to say, you had the audacity to file to ask for placement of Ziggy, therefore we're going to cut off all contact.
The best interest of the child that your client have or are parents for, or is it the best interest of Ziggy?
It's the best interest of Ziggy. And I think the best interest of Ziggy is to maintain contact, if not placement, with his sister and his four half-siblings their great-grandmother.
And is that what you're asking for, to maintain contact, or are you asking for placement?
If the court allows us to intervene, we're going to ask for placement. I think that's what the Fostering Connections Act says. But at the very least, there needs to be contact. HHS cannot just say, how dare you ask for placement, therefore you're never going to see Ziggy again and Britain's never going to see Ziggy again. That is not what we are here for. That is contrary to all these statutes. And that's contrary to Ziggy's best interest. I think it is in Ziggy's best interest, as the Fostering Connections Act indicates, to be placed with his family, if at all possible. And that would include his sibling, Britain. So for those reasons, we ask that the court vacate the court's denial of our petition for leave to intervene with directions that we be allowed to intervene. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. The next case of the day is Mental Health Board